razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Prescott takes off running the football. Whoa, I don't think this is going to work out.
It will. They'll be able to clock this. They were planned for it. It's down. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, the official gets in the way. The game's over.
Gosh.
The game is over.
Oh, he did.
Oh, they're going to look at this.
It's going to be over because the umpire has to touch the ball. Of course, that's ridiculous for a game to end like that, Jim. Wow, I am livid if I'm a Cowboy fan and if I'm a Niners fan.
That's the end of the game.
The game is over. The game is over, and San Francisco survives and advances.
They advance to take
then
on.
Then he's livid because he's a Cowboys fan.
He's impartial when he calls the game.
Stop it.
I don't... I'm not a big Tony Romo guy, by the way. 49ers beat the Cowboys 23-17. I find him to be insufferable at times. Like, he's so sensational with his comments. Like, the little, what was that play where they threw a slant over the middle, and then the Cowboy receiver was going to throw it to Tony Pollard on the sideline, and, like, it went over his head,
went out
of bounds.
Yeah.
And, like, Tony Romo said that would have been an automatic first down because there was clear path ahead. Then they show the replay, and there's five 49ers in the way before he's even at the first down line.
Like, it would have been...
He's such a sensationalist.
I mean, first of all, his knowledge of the offensive play calls and the formations.
Yeah, he's great at that.
Is an element that we've never had before that makes him worth listening to. The fact that there was a fight between ex-Cowboys in terms of how CBS got the NFC game like that was, one, a little bit disturbing because they don't call those games on the regular. And two, we know it got the ire of Troy Aikman because he let us know. But the last thing I wanted was yet another Cowboy of the two Cowboys quarterbacks calling a Cowboys game.
I like Romo, but he felt too invested.
I agree with that.
He was too much yesterday. He was too much
yesterday. I think he was invested, like,
maybe.
Deeply.
I do too.
I didn't really find him being over the top like Cowboy Homer, though.
I didn't mean it like that. It just meant, like, but see, the sensational felt like it took a step up because he cared so much.
It's also maybe one thing if it's a regular season game, but when it's a playoff game and it's so it's magnified by such a greater level and on a bigger stage, I want impartiality. The fact that everywhere you turn, including this morning, and Michael Irvin, and the fact that Michael Irvin is on ESPN with Stephen A. Smith, and the first thing out of Michael Irvin's mouth is he won't say a disparaging word about Mike McCarthy. It's on the players, and it was all the players because it's up to the players. And me and Emmett used to stand in the tunnel because we knew at the end of the day, no matter what they taught us and told us, it was up to us to do what we had to do as the best players on the team. And I'm like, stop it, stop it, stop it. This is preparation. This is coaching. This is all the different reasons why I've been warning Cowboys fans since day one. They got the wrong guy as their head coach. And yet you got too many apologists because they played for the Cowboys, either for fear of being backlashed by Jerry and the organization or for other reasons with the network. But they won't say what we want to hear, which is honest commentary about what the hell's going on there.
Well, what'd you think of the quarterback draw play that was the final play of the game yesterday?
It was the wrong play because of the time on the clock. I think it was a savvy play if there was... And from everybody you talk to within the game, 16 is the magic number, not 14. If there was 16 seconds or more, you could pull off exactly what they were trying to pull off. But the fact that this was just the absolute end of all ends the way it was supposed to end for the Cowboys, because we thought we'd seen it bad in time management situations in the past and timeouts with the Texans. But we knew from the get-go, and I warned all you Cowboys fans, how bad Mike McCarthy is. And the misstep after misstep and all season long between saying that we were in the O zone instead of the red zone, but that we, you know, or you know what, not going for the touchdown because all along all we wanted was a field goal or timeouts or we couldn't see the clock or all these other things. The fact that you still tried to do that and that's the way your season ended was so fitting for how the whole season has gone for the Cowboys. Now, the rumors are that McCarthy's going to be back. I don't know how.
Yeah, rumors are that he's going to be back. Stephen Jones was on the flagship up in Dallas saying that he's going to return more than likely as the head coach. Here is Mike McCarthy after the game defending that quarterback draw.
I have no problem with the call. We call the situation a church clock situation. This is something we practice every Friday and Saturday. So, you know, we're trying to get inside the 20-yard line. We want the last play to come down to, you know, it would have been some form of five vertical pass concept. So we had two set, you know, based on which, you know, where we were going to be, you know, in the final yardage here. So, based on, you know, being that tight, 14 seconds, you know, we should clearly get the ball spiked there. And, you know, I haven't seen the replay. I'm sure you have. But I'm surprised. I was shocked as anybody on offense that we didn't get to that last play.
He's lying.
I hated the call. Take two shots at the end zone with 13 seconds left. Take two shots.
You're
see
still
what you
within
got.
Range, whether it's a Hail Mary or otherwise. You're in range, but here's the reason why he's lying. And the NBA, we did the same thing all the time. We had NBA of refs and top officials at all of our practices. The fact that Dak didn't try and hand that ball to a referee so that they could actually set the ball ready for play, as opposed to the lineman doing it himself, was the first indication that he can say till he's blue in the face they practiced it. They certainly did not, if that's how they handled that.
Not with the time element there, for sure. And, like, setting it down there was, like, okay. Like, the optimal move there, hand the ball to the umpire, let him spot the ball. And everybody's blaming the officials when they should be blaming the Dallas Cowboys. They should be blaming Dak Prescott. Like, get out of the way of the umpire. If you just get out of the way, like, you don't even have to hand it to him. You have the ball, you want to give it to your center, you want to put it down on the hash mark, whatever, do that. But you know what you don't do? You don't create a wall around the umpire to get to the football.
He had to shove asses out of the way to get to the ball.
There was two NFL offensive linemen in front of the umpire. There was Dak Prescott, one of the biggest quarterbacks in the entire NFL, in front of the umpire.
Texans might want to call that official, by the way. He could block. He might do better than some of the guys that got on the line.
Get out of his way. That was so stupid. Everybody's like, why is the umpire so far away from the ball? Why is the umpire running into the players? Get out of the way of the dude. You've got to know the rule.
Here's the other thing, Jeremy. 14 penalties. Mm-hmm. Self-inflicted wounds. And then what do you hear coming out of the locker room at halftime? Oh, Mike McCarthy says they got to stop with the self-inflicted wounds. What do? They proceed to self-inflict several more wounds that either took turnovers or down and distance situations that would have been advantageous to getting the Niners to have to punt. And they kept flipping the script over and over and over again, going, at a certain point, you can't just blame the players. That's coaching. That's discipline. That's all the things that they didn't have all year. That it just reared its head on 14 different occasions where you can go, okay, it's not that last play that everybody, if you're a Cowboy fan, it's all the other 14 that took you out of situations that would have helped you.
Here was Dak Prescott throwing shade at the referees after the game.
I think they were aiming at the referees.
Yeah. They were at the referees.
Credit to them, then.
That's a take.
Yeah. Oh, credit. Credit to them.
There's a reason Dak Prescott saying credit to the fans throwing stuff at referees. That was a classy move there, Dak, for a quarterback who's normally classy. There's a reason that this team is the most penalized team in the league. They had 14 penalties yesterday, which you alluded to. The hands to the face on the third down that would have gotten the defense off the field. The Randy Gregory hold when he was 5 yards away from the ball.
No need to even do
embarrassing.
That.
You know why the Cowboys do this, though? It's because Dak Prescott complains about officiating. It's because Mike McCarthy all year long complains about officiating. You know what good coaches and good leaders do? They accept the responsibility for them penalizing all the time. You fix it up. You clean it up. You don't gripe about officiating in week 12 when the officials cost you a game. You know what you do? You coach it up. You figure out a way to be better at discipline and not be penalized as much as you are. This was poor leadership, and it's the Cowboys not accepting responsibility for themselves, and it's embarrassing if I'm a Cowboys fan.
This is Daryl Morey 101. Like, the only thing missing is that McCarthy and the Cowboys sent an 89-page document to the league today to show all the different highlighted ways they got screwed in a game they completely self-inflicted and lost themselves, which is what the Rockets did, if you're not aware, and Daryl did after they got beat by Golden State by missing all those threes in that deciding game. This is the kind of way, you're right, they complain about this stuff all the time. But the one thing you keep seeing is, you know what? The Tiger doesn't change his stripes. This is what we've seen all along from Mike McCarthy, and it goes back to his Packer days. He just had better assistant coaches in the fact that they would stop him and before he could do the kind of things he's done. He's consistently shown he doesn't have the discipline. He doesn't have the control. He's not a good game manager, clock manager, all the different things that come with being a head coach. And they all showed up right at the exact wrong time and ended their season.
Another embarrassing bad decision for the Cowboys in this one. Ezekiel Elliott said after the game he was playing with a partially torn PCL, which credit to Ezekiel Elliott. Maybe it was the reason he didn't have a great year. Playing through an injury, I admire that. That's great. That's awesome. He's a gamer. Why did he get 12 carries and Tony Pollard got 4? If the dude's playing with a partially torn PCL, like, I admire that, Zeke. I get it. I'm not blaming you at all for this. But if you know that as a Dallas Cowboy play caller, Kellen Moore, whether it's Mike McCarthy in installing the game plan throughout the week. You can't have three times more carries than a better running back who's behind you, who's healthy.
Take it another level to that, Jeremy. Take it to the fact that everybody's criticizing C.D. Lamb because he only had one catch for 21 yards. And everybody's saying he's your go-to guy. No, Amari Cooper is, and he's paid like it. And he did just about as the same amount of production as C.D. Lamb. So what does that tell you? Your biggest resources are being misused. The way that you're actually playing the game, and everybody knew it. They were like, you know what? The Cowboys say they're going to run the ball, but the minute they get behind, they're going to go completely and alienate the run and do the only thing that they know is pass to get pass. But yet when they were passing, the guys they were passing it to weren't the guys that you were supposed to be throwing it to.
Jerry Jones after the game admitting we underachieved this year.
When you get this combination of players together, you need to have success because we all know how it goes in the NFL. The whole thing is set up to take away from the best and add to the ones that need improvement. And personnel-wise, I think we have one of the best.
One of the best personnel teams in the NFL yet ousted in the wild card round at home to San Francisco. A lot of questions saying, is Mike McCarthy going to be back as the Dallas Cowboy head coach? Stephen Jones said that he's going to be the son of Jerry Jones, but should Mike McCarthy be back as the head coach of the Cowboys?
And even a further step than that, Jeremy, does this hinder Kellen Moore's ability to get a head coaching job?
I would say
because
yes.
Because as much as he was one of the hot names, along with Byron Leftwich, late in the season, and knowing that the cycle was coming up, I think this tarnished a lot of that going into this offseason where guys that run teams and ownership is going to go, you know, he's very innovative with some of the plays they tried to call. But if you're the OC and you had those weapons and you didn't do this and they didn't get that and the numbers were what they were for your best players, I'm not sure I want that guy running my team's offense, let alone my team, period.
Cowboys out, 49ers advance. In the other NFC game, Tom Brady and the Bucs over the Eagles, 31-15.
Here's the play, dropping to throw. Brady looks toward the end zone, throws. Caught ball, Evans. He's got a Tampa Bay touchdown. Does a somersault, and the Bucs put the dagger in the heart of the Eagles.
The dagger. Tom Brady.
He goes business. From deep when he brings those calls, and he gets it right where you need it to be.
Gene Deckerhoff on 98 Rock. Business as usual for Tom Brady. The best stat in all of sports is that Tom Brady has more Super Bowl championships than any other franchise in the NFL. Like, that is the best stat in sport. Miss me with anything else.
No, and I think that, you know, you look at it and you go, sure, you can nitpick. And I said early on in the first drive, the Eagles could have stopped him if they didn't get screwed by a really bad call on roughing Brady. But overall,
I disagree with that. I thought that was a good call. By the way the rule's written, it was 3 seconds late, and it was below the waist. You can call that roughing twice.
It was on the hip.
That's right, and at the waist.
And both Troy and the NFL guy in the booth agreed with my scenario.
That's right.
Which
they're
was,
wrong, too.
That's fine. You can think that. But here's the other thing when I look at it. This is more so on the Eagles. Well, you know what? If you weren't going to get Smith the ball the whole first half, but oh, by the way, when you finally put points on the board, you got Smith involved in the game plan. It's pretty simple. He, just like we talked about with the Cowboys, he's one of your best players. Whether you have to do something a little bit unorthodox to get the ball in his hands or not, you had too many opportunities where you didn't get the ball in the hands of your best player. And as much as you wanted to establish the run, at a certain point, you have to have balance and you have to get your best players involved.
Devontae Smith's a stud. I tweeted this during the game that Devontae Smith deserves Deshaun Watson because watching the Eagles, they need a quarterback. Jalen Hurts walking with a walking boot after the game. I understand his ankle was hurt. Doesn't affect his ability to throw. He's one of the worst throwers in the NFL at the quarterback position. If they want to win seriously, Jalen Hurts cannot be the quarterback.
I told you all along, and I took heat early on when I said this, but he's not a starting quarterback in the NFL. I believe he can be a Taysom Hill. I believe he can be a weapon that not a lot of teams have that can be used as to your advantage if you are the coach of a football team and an offensive coordinator. But I believe if the Eagles truly have aspirations of getting back to not only making the playoffs but making a run, they got to have someone else behind center starting next year.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Speaking of the quarterback position, Deshaun Watson, Brian Flores, are they connected at the hip? The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Brian Flores, Deshaun Watson connected to the hip in 3 minutes. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. First, though, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Johnny, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I'm just got a quick comment about the Cowboys situation and the way the game ended. I'm a diehard Cowboys fan, been for years and years, from the Tony Romo fumble, field goals, couldn't fight and get in the end zone, to the Dez caught it, didn't catch it. Because plays like this is how our season has ended for many, many times. So that doesn't just surprise me as far as what happened yesterday. It's just the continued, I'm with Joe, the penalties. They killed themselves yesterday with penalties. Boneheaded, stupid plays that we have seen all year long. That it's not that last play where we lost the game. We lost the game with those 14 penalties, and half or more than half of those we shouldn't have even had. I mean, they're boneheaded plays. They're professionals. They get paid a lot of money not to make those stupid mistakes. I saw plays that high schoolers and junior high kids, I coached little league football, peewee football, and they don't make those types of plays in those types of situations.
Appreciate the call, Johnny.
Look, here's the thing. I agree, to a certain extent, it's self-discipline amongst the players themselves. But at a certain point, too, just like the final play, it's coaching. It's game plan. It's repetitive practice time, so that when the situation actually pops up, if you're a defensive lineman, you know the last thing you need to be called for is a holding penalty. When you're a defensive lineman. Yeah, that it wasn't
close to the play.
It was 5 yards away from the play minimum, to the standpoint of the last play of the game, to all the other plays. Like I said, I mentioned this earlier, a majority of those penalties were situation changing. Like, instead of down and distance heavily in your favor that the analytics says you would have gotten off the field, you gave them first downs, or you gave them a much easier scenario on the field. It was just self-inflicted wounds that you go, oh my God, one or two is almost too much in a playoff game, but 14?
It's like you said, it's a lack of leadership. It's a lack of taking responsibility throughout the season, though. I mean, we've saw all year long, Mike McCarthy has been bashing officials after every single game, week in, week out. And if you had that mentality, you're not going to fix the error in your ways. You got to be able to take responsibility, and Mike McCarthy failed to do that all year.
But Jeremy, Joel, is the local peewee team more disciplined?
If it's Johnny's coaching it, I think so.
Okay, want to make sure we're clear on that.
Close based on what we saw yesterday.
I don't know if they're going to get penalized 14 times in a game if Johnny's coaching
team?
That peewee. Not Johnny. Johnny sounds like he knows what he's doing.
If they're talking about a football team that on peewee days, they feel like they got screwed and they're not going to be playing football next Sunday, then Mike McCarthy and the peewee team have a lot in common.
Yeah, I feel for Dallas Cowboy fans. I mean, that was a bitter pill to swallow yesterday. Just not playing well. It wasn't the official. I mean, he was not playing well. It was a lack of discipline throughout.
And the thing was, you weren't outplayed by the Niners. Early on, you were. But you know what? You know Jimmy G's going to Jimmy G. And Jimmy G gave you a gift. And once he gave you the gift, the momentum changed immediately. You finally capitalized. You were in a position two times where you had the ball with a chance to dictate the end of the game. And you just... You know, you just couldn't get out of your own way. That's what makes it so sad if you're a Cowboy fan. It wasn't like you were just absolutely obliterated like the Patriots or the Eagles. This was one where, all the self-inflicted mistakes aside, except for the last two, you literally had a chance to have multiple times with the ball in your hands down six.
Yep.
At home.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Brian Flores, Deshaun Watson, it seems like they're a little bit more connected than we thought. Now, we knew that Deshaun Watson wanted to go to Miami. A big reason for that, according to reports, is because he wanted to play for Brian Flores. There's been some reports after Brian Flores has been fired that Adam Schefter has said that he wanted Deshaun Watson badly in Miami. Well, Jordan Schultz, who is does a little bit of everything, he has a bunch of podcasts with NBA players. CJ McCollum, he has a podcast with Allen Robinson. So he's kind of a podcaster with these people that are in the know. He says that Deshaun Watson and Brian Flores have been in constant communication trying to navigate a scenario where they go to the same team, per sources. Watson trusts and likes Flores and has been adamant internally that he'd like to play for him next season. We've discussed this quite a bit, especially last week, that if you're a Houston Texan fan, 713-780-3776, and the Texans hired Brian Flores, would you be okay with Deshaun Watson returning as the quarterback of the Houston Texans? I've said that like this isn't going to happen. And the reason that I feel like it's not going to happen is because Deshaun Watson, like the negativity that Deshaun Watson relates to Kyle McNair and Jack Easterby far outweighs the positivity that he has with Brian Flores. Am I underselling that, though, a little bit?
Yeah, I was
maybe the
ask
positivities maybe has more value and meaning to Deshaun Watson?
See, that's what I was going to ask you guys, was the fact that from the franchise's standpoint, too, you think about this and go, as long as, and it's a big if he can get all of the off-the-field stuff taken care of before it gets too far down the road into the offseason, you realize from a profitability standpoint, which we've talked about is king with all these NFL owners, you realize that because of the abnormal blue Kool-Aid drinking effect that this fan base in this city has for some of its teams, particularly the two losing teams right now, there is a majority, and I mean this, a majority of this city that would be willing to take Deshaun back because they knew what he did and what he meant when he was here. From an internal standpoint, if nothing else, the owner's looking at it, and it, as he evaluates things, going, I know I'd get a lot of my fans back. I know I'd get more merchandise sold. I know I'd get more positive hype, or at least hype about my team back.
You should win quicker.
And you would win quicker with him, right? Except for the fact that you're kind of tied down by the contract. And we know that the analytics says when you give the quarterback his first big contract, that's when you have more challenges. But then you look at it and you say, okay, I get that part of it. But we're talking about a fan base that suddenly hasn't forgotten about Deshaun to the standpoint of they're willing to look the other way and say, if he changes his mind, I don't think there's enough of this fan base that's scorned by a guy that said, I want out. I don't want to come back. But now suddenly is willing to forgive and forget and bring him back into the fold. I'm curious what the thinking is in this city, because it's very curious to me how many people that I've talked to that would be willing to take him back if he changed his mind.
See, I've been the other way on it. And Houston, let us know. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. From what I've read, it seems like more people are anti Deshaun Watson ever being back on the Houston Texans ever again. Like, it's
especially
like 60,
when you look at social media, there's a just way too many people in my mind that we'd be willing to forgive and forget and say we want him back. And then what weighs out more to you? Is it more about the 22 cases? Is it more about the fact that he turned his back on you and said, I'm done, I want out? Because some people just kind of just want to sweep under the rug the whole 22 cases and say, you know what, if he hadn't said he wanted out, it was Cal or me, that they would still be on his bandwagon and they would be supporting him in his corner. And that's the bigger issue. That's a major issue. You're willing to look past these 22 cases and say all that matters is he told Cal it was either him or me, and he told us he wanted out. That pisses me off.
I'm not good with either one of them, to be honest with you. I'm not good with the legal stuff, and I'm not good with the fact that I can't trust him. I mean, the Texans gave him a huge contract, no trade clause. They overpaid. They gave him the no trade clause when they didn't have to, and then he immediately says he wants out. And then on top of that, he's telling you where he's going to go as he has all of these civil cases going on. I want no part of the Deshaun Watson business. And we've asked the city what they think. But also, like, let's look at the other angle. Like, would Deshaun Watson be willing to accept that? Because I said no way. I said no way. The negativity of Cal McNair and Jack Easterby to Deshaun Watson's point of view far outweighs the positive stuff for Brian Flores. Am I off there? Do you think Deshaun Watson would entertain the idea of rejoining the Texans if they were told he was okay, if they hired Brian Flores? Do you think Deshaun Watson would be all right with that? I'm going to ask you your opinion when we come back. Also, the city, what do you think? Would you be okay with Deshaun Watson as the quarterback of the Houston Texans? And do you think Deshaun Watson would be willing to come back and get over things with the Houston Texans? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about Apollo Men's Health. Look, men and women, you're looking for more energy in your life. There are days you feel like you're just zapped, and the cold weather doesn't help. And, of course, with New Year's resolutions and all the things that you want to do to get off on your best foot in 2022, sometimes you feel like, you know what, internally, you're just not made up that way anymore to do the kind of things you used to do. Well, there's an answer for you. It's Apollo Men's Health. It says men's in the title, but for both men and women, they have hormone therapy. And there are women in the lobby every single week when I'm there that are getting the help of the staff and the expertise of Apollo Men's Health. They're benefiting because of the fact that they're feeling like their youthful self again. You can be the next in line because there's multiple ways that it can be administered. You can do it yourself at home. You can visit the clinic weekly, or you can do it if you're a man, cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy. You only have to go in once every 6 months, but you get the benefits on a daily basis. There's also all the other ways that they can get involved, from workout programs and doing a full body composition analysis so that you can chart your progress, to recovering quicker with HGH peptide therapy. Everything from your smoothie, from fat burners to all the powders that you need, they have it all under one roof. Two locations to better serve you, both near downtown Houston. They're here to help, and it starts with making that first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com. When you book that first appointment, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot, so you can try that out and see if that gives you more energy. And then just be honest with them when they ask you the questions. They'll get you answers. They'll put you on a program that works. They are a results-driven organization. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Would Texan fans be okay if Deshaun Watson said, I want to play for Brian Flores, you've hired Brian Flores, I want to be the quarterback of the Houston Texans? Would bygones be bygones? Lamont tweeting us in saying, I believe season ticket Texan fans want Deshaun, but us in general population want that pervert gone, mainly because he said he doesn't want to be here.
See, that's where I'm at. I think Lamont's spot on. And Lamont has, you know, the pulse of the city, which is the mainstay, in terms of the fact that it's like the Harden deal all over again. And that's why I was so adamant about Harden. It's one thing to say, what really chaps my ass is, both organizations, Texans and Rockets, Watson and Harden, bent over backwards at every single request, gave them the keys to the franchise, said, you know what, it's your way or the highway. And then the minute that the grass wasn't greener and things looked like it was souring just a bit, they wanted out. They wanted nothing to do with you. There was no loyalty. There was no connection. And that should mean something for this city. This city has too much pride and too many smart fans, I don't care if they're transplants or not, to accept that as being the norm and being okay. It was one thing to have to endure it once with Harden. It's another thing to do it all over again with Watson.
Cap'n on Twitch saying, Deshaun Watson lost my fan of the minute he decided he wanted to do the Harden way out. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Daryl, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Okay, I think I like the idea that I think Deshaun Watson should do a forgive and forget. I think that they had, you kind of said it earlier, whereas he gave a choice whether it's going to be Easterby or him. And I think he should let that go because he's in a situation where he got a lot, 22 cases against him. He wants those females, individuals, to forgive him and move on. And I think that that's something that he should consider as well. But I think it's something personal that he has with the management and the Texans organization. But there's always room to forgive and forget, and let's start over. And that's what I'm thinking, that he could come back. I wish he would, but, you know, I'm not his fan. I'm not a big fan of his, but I just think that moral ethics should take place.
Appreciate the call, Daryl. See, but that's what I'm talking about. There's a bigger portion of the fan base than we want to believe that would like to forgive and forget and bring him back. But here's the other thing.
He kind of painted that. I don't think Daryl was pro Deshaun.
Well, it's also not Jack. It's Cal. That was the big line in the sand. It's one thing for a very prominent player to be able to say, I want the coach gone. I want the general manager gone. I want the king of chapel and prayer gone. But when you say you want the owner gone, we've talked about this. Unless you're a Donald Sterling type that gives the league reason to get rid of you, he's not going anywhere.
Now, you can forgive and forget, to Daryl's point. I mean, it's something that you can have two grown men come together, have lunch, have a drink, and be like, okay, let's let bygones be bygones. Let's figure out a way to do this. I think that's something that's plausible.
Where's the food from? Because if it's Cal and we go to Lefties, we could talk.
Yeah, I mean, Deshaun might like the Lefties' approach to that. Now, if that were to ever be the case where, like, Deshaun is like, okay, we're going to agree, bygones are bygones, Deshaun Watson, the first time he speaks, better be the biggest apology we've ever seen in our lives. At least that's my point of view.
Go ahead, Brent.
You guys know that, like, I think it's a conversation worth having if Watson and Flores are really this tied at the hip. Is it at least a possibility? But I think the other angle to this conversation that stands out to me is, if they're this tied at the hip, does that mean Flores isn't a real candidate? Because if they're tied at the hip, it makes me feel like unless Houston is the only place that Flores could come, he may go elsewhere for the sole purpose of making sure he has Watson with him.
It's a good point. I think that the other thing that I was going to rebuttal on Jeremy's comments was the fact that it's like we're just glossing over the 22 cases. It's one thing to say if one of these things was the issue, right? If it was just the problem with wanting out and saying Cal was the reason and it's him or me and I got to go. But then when you start factoring in all these 22 cases, and regardless of how many people just want to think that it's really nothing or they're just going to be bought off, there's too much legitimacy. There's too many cases to just turn the other cheek and go, you know what? You know, we'll deal with that on the side. But if he just asked for forgiveness and came back and said he'd still want to play here and they could work it out, I'm not too worried about those 22 cases. And I think that's a very flippant, very, very abrasive way of looking at this entire situation. And they are two separate issues,
yeah,
but they're two major factors.
Well, I was operating under the impression that that gets settled. I was operating under the impression that that's something that Deshaun Watson does pay his way out of it. We saw some reports like kind of uncovering some documents on like some of the agreements of Deshaun Watson and one of the accusers with their settlement deal, upwards of $100,000. We've heard reports of 5 to 6 figure deals on some of the other civil suits as well. But I think that Brendan's point's a really good one. And in fact, if like my prediction is that Deshaun Watson is going to be a New York Giant, and it goes back to the Brian Flores situation. Like Brian Flores too, and we've even heard this from Mike Florio whenever he joined the Wheelhouse the other day. If Brian Flores has more than one offer, it's not going to be with the Houston Texans. Jordan Schultz, who we were talking about with this Deshaun Watson thing as well, he said, "What are you looking at?
You're giving him all the credit, and the Giants thing was my idea, but go ahead."
What are you, I was just going to the Jordan Schultz point. I mean, I predicted that he was going to be a Giant last week, too. I mean, I don't understand what you're saying.
That's the team they should look at because of the draft picks. Go ahead.
He was giving me credit for something entirely different.
But here's what Jordan Schultz said as well. Jordan Schultz, who we were just referring to as Deshaun Watson and Brian Flores, they've had this constant communication between the two, the scenario where they both want to be on the same team. Jordan Schultz also says, "Don't sleep on the prospect of Brian Flores to the Giants. I'm told owner John Mara respects and likes Flores, a Brooklyn native who grew up as a Giants fan. Flores would prioritize the G-man job and be at or near the top of his list per a source close to this situation."
He would get pushback from Patrick Creighton. When you were out over the holidays in Creighton, the diehard New Yorker growing up, right? Uh-huh. He said that the Mara family was not willing to turn and look the other way on all the Watson off-the-field stuff. Like they were kind of in the holier-than-thou category where maybe not so outwardly religious, but also about values and morals and all those things about what makes a Giant, and that they wouldn't be willing to look past that. Look, I want them to look past that. I want the Texans to get a hold of those two first-round picks this season because the turnaround happens that much quicker. It makes the job that much more attractive. It makes Nick Caserio look like, as long as he doesn't screw the picks up, that, you know what, you got the right guy for the gig because he's getting that kind of return on it no matter what happens with him off the field. But there's just too many things up in the air for me, and I'm just curious from the standpoint of overall how this looks, because if you're Brian Flores, whether it's the Patriots way or not, and whether you were shown the door because of how bad the discrepancies were between you and Greer, you did enough good and went on two different seasons runs that really were impressive to get you on the cusp of playoffs, to where there's got to be a better offer for you out there. There's got to be gigs with better resources and maybe more control out there for you to say that the Texans is the job that I want.
Well, that's to the point of Florida.
Even with Watson, though. Even with Watson in the mix, and that's a guy that you want to work with. But if you could go to, say, if Dallas opens up, and you could already have Dak and Cooper and CeeDee
Lamb. That's a huge jump to conclusions, though. I mean, Stephen Jones is saying that Dallas isn't going to open up.
Okay, but if you could go to Minnesota, and you already have Dalvin Cook and two, really, one at the well before his peak in Jefferson as wide receiver, and Thielen at the other side, and the defensive guys that you have on the cusp of being a playoff team already, why would you take the Texans?
Well, that's Florio's point, is that if there's more than one team interested in Brian Flores, he won't be the next head coach of the Houston Texans.
Unless there's more of a deeply rooted friendship
and relationship than just coach general manager with these Patriots guys.
I believe, too, if you're a Houston Texan fan, whether you're pro Deshaun Watson or anti Deshaun Watson, you should be rooting for Brian Flores to be the next head coach of the New York Giants. One, because I don't think Flores is a great head coach and I don't want to be the head coach of the Texans. But the second point to that is, if Brian Flores is going to be the head coach of the Giants, and we are to believe this report from Jordan Schultz that he and Watson are connected at the hip and they want to be on the same team, the team that would be most attractive to trade Deshaun Watson to because of the, you know, the picks that they have, the resources that they have, would be the New York Giants. So I'm not, if you're a Deshaun Watson fan, if you're anti-Deshaun Watson, you should be rooting for Brian Flores to be named the New York Giants football
coach. And
that's
a great point, because here's the other thing. You're looking at franchises that need to win now. Cleveland, right? Atlanta thinks they want to get the rebuild. They don't want think the rest of their roster is rebuild worthy. It's just Matt Ryan. So they want to move on quickly. Pittsburgh, as of last night, if they're moving on from Ben, seems to tend to be leaning towards going through the draft or going through the process of getting another quarterback the organic way, as opposed to the trade way of getting the established veteran. So you're looking at it going, you want the scenarios where you don't know what Seattle's going to do, but if they move on from Russell Wilson, are they rebuilding or are they retooling? So you want, if you're a Texans fan, the more situations where it's advantageous to get a win now guy, but also that they have the resources to give back to you, because you don't want to settle just because they're a win now team. If they don't give you what you need and have multiple resources that you want, then why make the deal?
Yeah, most of those teams that you mentioned are teams that aren't going to be picking in the first half of the NFL draft. Like, the two teams to me...
Well, Atlanta is.
But barely. Like, they had a decent record. Where you're looking at Atlanta, they have the eighth pick. The Giants have two picks ahead of the
five and
pick.
Six,
they have
right?
five and seven.
Seven.
But another team that would be, you know, if you're a Houston Texans fan and you're looking at this year's draft as a team that could be interested in trading for Deshaun Watson... I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles don't have the top 10 pick, but the Philadelphia Eagles also have three picks in the first round. Like, so
Carolina?
They have 15, 16, and 19. So those are the two teams that you should be really rooting for, interested in Deshaun Watson, or the Giants and the Eagles.
Because the other caveat to the teams that need to win now is the coach that needs to win now. And that's why Matt Rhule knows that he almost got fired this year. He hasn't gotten fired yet, but to save his bacon for the long term, he better do something really quickly to make strides. And the only way to make strides is to get a guy that you have confident calling the signals behind center that you don't obviously have right now. That's not going to be done through a draft pick, because there's going to be growing pains and a work in progress. You need a guy that can come in with Christian McCaffrey and some of the guys you already have on that roster and say, I can get you to the playoffs or right on the cusp of the playoffs next season. Otherwise, I might not be here.
If there were four teams that I was picking that were interested in Deshaun Watson, were going to be in the sweepstakes, and they're going to be competing against each other trying to trade for Deshaun Watson, I'd have the Giants at the top of my list. The Eagles would be close. Carolina would be there. And Atlanta would be there, too.
Denver? I mean,
and Denver, maybe. They have the ninth pick.
Yeah.
So they would be in that conversation, too. So the Texans should have some options, even if Deshaun Watson were to come to Cal and Jack and be like, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry for all that trouble I put you through. It'll be an interesting story to watch develop. 713-780-ESPN. When we return, we'll ask one of the Wheelhousemen if they trust Nick Caserio to make the coaching hire of the Houston Texans. Fifth coach in Houston Texans history. Do you trust Caserio to get the right guy? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, if you're out there and you're looking for something to do, maybe a date night, maybe something to do with the whole family, and you want something new, different, not the same old, well, why don't you get down to Discovery Green and check out what they've got going on right now with the Pixar Putt. The Pixar Putt is the Pixar, you know it. It's the film company that does all the great films, Toy Story, The Incredibles, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, and so many more. Well, they've now got an 18-hole putt-putt course centered around all those films, and it's fun for the whole family or for a date night. It takes up a good portion of time, so you can actually have some fun. It's not over in the blink of an eye. And it's family-friendly so that you can do it right there in your own city, right in the middle of Discovery Green with all the restaurants and everything nearby. All you got to do is go to PixarPutt.com and get all the information. The round takes about an hour and a half. So it's going to be actually, like I said, for a date night, the perfect experience. You guys can talk and bond while you're actually, you know, playing putt-putt and then grab some food. And then realize that was worth every single minute that I spent on that course. It's 18 fun and interactive holes inspired by those stories, characters, movies, and icons. And it's great with the whole family or your friends, just like it is for a date night. It's absolutely fantastic. They have social distancing. They have sanitary requirements with sanitization. So you know it's going to be safe as well. But tickets are only available online. Go to PixarPutt.com. That's PixarPutt.com for tickets and information. My family loves it. You're going to love it as well. Get there before it's too late because it's only open to March 20th. Get to PixarPutt.com.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit InnovationMap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Aaron Wilson reporting a new candidate for the Houston Texans. Texans have requested permission to interview highly regarded Philadelphia Eagles defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon. Gannon, 39 years old, the DC right now for the Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, only been there 1 year. Sirianni bringing him over. Was the DB coach for the Colts for 3 years prior to that. Does have a lengthy background in the NFL. He started off as a college scout in 2009 for the St. Louis Rams under Billy Devaney, who we had on earlier today, and has been an assistant for a long time. Cody Stutz, one of the Woolhousemen, joining us now. So if the Texans do interview Gannon, he'd be the fourth. Brian Flores has already interviewed. Joe Lombardi, the grandson of Vince Lombardi, has interviewed.
Good to know that's his title.
As has Hines Ward, who is the current receivers coach for Florida Atlantic University.
In case anyone's wondering, Joe Lombardi, the OC for the Chargers.
Yeah, but I care more that he's Vince Lombardi's grandson. Let's be honest. That's the lead story with Joe Lombardi. The fact that he's Vince Lombardi's grandson is far more important than
he was Drew Brees' quarterback coach because he needed a lot of coaching.
Ain't much else that's impressive about Joe Lombardi, so...
Yeah, Brendan pretty much roasted him, pretty much dismissed him as a candidate for the Houston Texans, a real candidate for the Houston Texans. But looking at these four guys, I mean, Gannon hasn't interviewed yet, so the three guys they've interviewed, what are some early takeaways you have of the Texans' early interview process?
If they are trying to make it appear like this interview process is not a sham and that they're going to just hire a New England guy, they're doing a good job of making it feel like it's not a sham.
Really?
My thought was last week, well, if Mayo's their guy, don't even make it a sham interview process. Just interview him the first chance you get. Don't let him leave the building and hire him. And they're doing everything they can to make sure that it's a far and wide cast of the net. And if these are the first four guys, they haven't even talked to McDaniels that are reportedly requested him. They haven't even talked to Mayo yet or reportedly requested him. We expect both those guys to get a shot to interview for this, I would think. So they're casting a pretty wide net here.
I would agree that they're casting a wide net, but I would only look at one of the three guys, and four if you want to include Gannon, as like a serious candidate to be the next head coach of the Texans.
Flores is the only serious candidate for me that they've interviewed.
Okay. All right. So then why is it not a sham? If only one of the four guys would be legitimate.
Well, the sham process would be interviewing a wide range of candidates and then ending up with a Patriots guy.
But they're going to.
Right, but they're doing a good job making it appear like it's not.
That's what
a
I said during the show today was the fact that there is no limitation on how many guys you can interview. However, at the end of the day, especially since the last guy wasn't a Patriots way guy, they're going to hire one of those two guys.
Someone in that building very much cares about the appearance of this thing looking like it's been totally above board and that it wasn't just we hired Cully for a year and we're firing him and we're hiring exactly who we want. Someone in that building cares very much about it appearing to be a much more common process than the way that they are operating.
Then why would you interview Ward, though?
One, it could be for a position coach job.
Right, I know, but I mean that's what we were talking about earlier.
Right, but I'm also saying,
but Jeremy, every interview that doesn't have Patriots ties adds legitimacy to their process in other people's eyes.
I guess
that's what I'm getting at.
I guess my point is that it would need to be a legitimate candidate to do that. And that Hines Ward's not a legitimate
candidate. You don't know that because,
one,
they hired David Culley, and two, because of the fact that they're interviewing a guy that has been known for his leadership, for his toughness, and maybe they look but they look maybe innovative, right? And the fact that they're considering guys that other teams hadn't considered yet, so they're trying to add to their own resume and bringing in as many guys as they do.
Here's another aspect. You interview Hines Ward, and then you end up with Gerard Mayo – you can say, well, at least we didn't end up hiring Hines Ward, who has even less coaching experience than Jerod Mayo.
The comp that I have with Hines Ward, looking at this year's coaching search to last year's coaching search, is Josh McCown. Like, whenever you interview Josh McCown, you're always like, what in the world are they doing? Are they gonna, like, he was never really a legitimate candidate. Everybody freaked out over that when it wasn't even really, like, authentic. It's kind of similar to Hines Ward, except Hines Ward actually has been a coach in the NFL and is currently still a coach.
Peter Schrager said they're going to interview or want to interview McCown again.
Well, and I said at least it wasn't the bad – when I brought it up today with McCown, the reason why was because at least you don't look bad by bringing him in, trying to make everybody believe he's an actual player that you wanted when you really wanted to just guide your quarterbacks and see how much more you bring to the table that you might consider. And now, because it's going into an offseason when you can do everything that you want to know every single guy's leadership and their coaching skills so that maybe they don't end up as your head coach, but maybe just maybe they end up on your staff, especially if you're picking the assistants.
Right. If that's going to continue, if you're going to have a lightly experienced head coach, you may need to help that guy find some assistance.
All right. Looking at the Nick Caserio angle of this, like whoever the coach is going to be, do you trust Nick Caserio to make this hire, to make the right hire?
Why wouldn't you?
Well, David Culley would be the obvious answer.
Yeah, well,
but if he's executing some grand plan that was to keep his guy from eating a whole year or potentially – I do believe they intended for this to be a two-year situation.
Me too.
David Culley.
As well.
And they didn't want whoever they ultimately truly desire to be the head coach to eat 2 years' worth of losses and 2 years' worth of bad press and give that guy, wherever he is, an opportunity to grow just a little bit more before they make that hire. If it's some grand scheme, then I'm going to judge him most harshly on this hire more so than the David Culley hire.
That's where I stand, too. Now, the one hang-up that I have with that is the guaranteed money. Like, I totally understand the bridge. I understand that you need the stopgap coach. I understand that Nick Caserio didn't hire the head coach that he wanted the first time around because he wanted Culley to eat the losses. And I agree with you that it was a two-year deal and part of the master plan. Like, I'm on your side with that. But why the money? Why the $22 million guaranteed?
Who cares? Not his money. Well, it doesn't affect the salary cap. It doesn't prevent them from spending anything to improve the football team.
Who cares? The answer is Cal McNair and the investors who are making money off of this team. $22 million is significant.
Cal McNair didn't care. He wrote the check.
I would disagree that he doesn't care.
My answer to that was substantial. But the fact that they had to convince someone to take this job. And because you were going in with the cupboard bare, with a rat problem, with all the different things that makes this the most unattractive job on the market, you had to have something that enticed him to want it to anyone to take the job.
Sure. Sure. My criticism about the money paid to Culley is it doesn't affect the ability to win going forward.
100%. We said that earlier today on
and
the Killer
really,
Bees.
Honestly, if that's such a big sticking point for Cal McNair, doesn't that make it more likely that Nick Caserio and Jack Easterby only get one more chance to get this right? And if they don't get it right, then everybody's cleaned out at the end of it?
Sure. But the question is, do you trust Nick Caserio to make the hire? And whenever you talk about the $22 million, now you're looking at a general manager who hired a coach and then guaranteed 4 years of a five-year deal at significant amount of money. So that certainly comes into the equation of how you evaluate Nick Caserio. And if it doesn't, then you're not looking at it fairly.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's a lot of backroom dealing that could be associated with that, taking care of a certain agent that's in charge of a future candidate that you might like or a guy that put in a good word for you on a player's agent and stuff like that. And plus, that's just the cost of doing business in the NFL. And if Cal's willing to write the check, what does Caserio care how much money David Culley makes?
The price of doing business in the NFL is to give $22 million 4 years guaranteed to a coach that has no business being a head coach in the NFL?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the price of doing business.
I couldn't disagree
talking
more.
With these guys.
Couldn't disagree more on that.
Yeah, that's the price. I mean, you're not going to make a whole lot less than other head coaches when you're a head coach. Like, there's clearly a floor to how much these coaches make.
Yeah, but if it's David Culley, who has no business being a head coach, you can get him on the cheap. Anyways, what do you have coming up on the Wheelhouse today?
Well, we're going to dig into a lot of these candidates. I am disgusted that they interviewed Joe Lombardi. Disgusted.
Vince Lombardi's grandson.
Vince Lombardi's grandson, Chargers offensive coordinator, and I'll explain that. Exactly why BK's back. He was live and in person for the Dallas debacle yesterday.
Ooh, nice.
We'll dive in deep to that.
So he missed Friday because he had to be in Dallas on Sunday?
I don't believe he went to a wedding.
Oh, you can't spell back without BK.
That is true. And on that note.
That's way better than your dad jokes. Nope. All right, Arizona at L.A. tonight, the final game in Super Wild Card Weekend. Rams 3.5-point favorites. Both quarterbacks looking for their first ever playoff win. J.J. Watt's going to be back. J.J. Watt being back. Yeah, he's back. He posted a tweet saying, "I'm going to be back." He's back.
I thought the Cardinals' actual website was. I thought I saw something where they were
questioning. No, he's playing.
Okay.
He's playing. Because Watt is back, I'm rooting for the Cardinals tonight, even though my money's on the Rams. I had a good week.
You love
this
their quarterback.
By the way. I do love their quarterback. What does that mean?
I'm giving you, I'm backing up reasons why you like the Cardinals instead of just J.J. Watt, who you're rooting for. Don't get so defensive.
I'm not. I'm just asking what it meant. I took the Rams -4 in this one. I was 7-1 leading into this game. I also have the under tonight, 15.5 points. What do you like? What side do you like?
Whoever you're on, because you're picking it, you're at a phenomenal rate right now, and I think that, you know, the wheelhouse is going to have you on as their prognosticator going forward.
They should. My numbers are far better than their numbers.
Fired up with Cody.
I wasn't fired up with Cody. It was a good conversation, just bantering between the two. All right, that does it for us. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work behind the glass. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.